The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So the hurling show is back. We're back a week early because Joe Canning was available for interview yesterday. So I said, why not bring you a hurling show? And we have Derek McGrath on the line. So we have two big hitters in the hurling world on a day when we weren't even going to do a hurling show. So listen, you're all very lucky. Derek, how's it going?
Adam, how are you?
All good. Have you got championship fever yet?
Yeah, I think this time of year, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, it's probably dominated by, you know, preparation ahead of the championship. But yeah, you miss it more than ever this year, I think, you know, the fact that you're, you know, very emotionally attached to the group that you're involved in as well. You know, it's probably a little bit more difficult ahead of the championship without being, you know, wanting people to feel sorry for me either. You know, I'm still looking forward to the championship, but it's a bit different all the same.
Yeah, so you're just looking on as a fan, and, like, I suppose when you have to separate yourself and watch the league final and maybe they kind of underperformed on that day, what are you thinking? Are you looking in the crowd thinking, well, I would have changed this, I would have done that? Can you separate yourself to just watch the match?
Yeah, well, look, I have to be completely honest and not be a hypocrite. I didn't even go to, because I almost consciously made a decision not to go to the Waterford games this year. I go to the championship games now, particularly the home games. My own home house, my parents' house, is only 20 yards from Welsh Park, so we'll have the Sambos out and the tea for sale. We're going to make a few pounds that day. But I didn't. Consciously, I kind of made a decision to, not that it's uncomfortable to go to the games, but just, you know, that detachment perhaps was necessary for all in terms of just moving forward. So, yeah, look, I watched it on the TV, and I you'd be watching different parts, but I think Waterford had a really, really good league and underperformed in the final. But there was elements of the final, you know, in terms of Stevie's chance just before half-time where things could have been different as well, albeit, you know, there seemed to be a gulf there with Limerick. But look, plenty to work on for the summer ahead for Waterford.
Yeah, definitely. So RT have released their summer coverage, and you'll obviously be delighted as a Munster man, me not so much as a Leinster man, because there's 8 round-robin games in the Munster Championship and then the final to make 9, and there's only 2 in Leinster and the final to make 3. So I don't know about if you know, Derek, we have a big chip on our shoulders here on this show with JJ Delaney and Cheddar Plunkett and Conal Keeney about the Munster, the glory of the Munster Championship and the poor man's Leinster Championship. This isn't helping us.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a chip on the shoulder. I've often been accused of being the most, not the most paranoid man, but certainly, you know, sometimes when you hear grumblings of discontent, they often come from my direction. So listen, nothing wrong with that. Gives you an edge in many ways. But yeah, look, I think obviously I'm part of that whole process for the summer, so it's a bit more difficult. Not that I'm avoiding or anything, but I think it's probably two things, I suppose. It's probably a reflection of the Munster Championship in terms of the perception around the Munster Championship and the reality around the Munster Championship last year in terms of the quality of the games. So you'd imagine that the national broadcaster is trying to give the people what they want in terms of, you know, a reflection of viewership figures, a reflection of the quality of the games, if you like. And I think there's a general perception as well, if you like, that there, not that there's this disparity in terms of quality, but there's a disparity in terms of, you know, the intensity of the games. And maybe that's based on traditional kind of hierarchy that the Munster Championship was kind of sacred. You know, it's almost sacrilegious to be talking about it in any way other than it being above every other championship. So I think, you know, maybe there's lessons to be learned there. But I think it's, you know, the games that they're showing, the Galway-Wexford game, the Kilkenny-Galway game, plus the final, are games of real quality. The team that probably feel that they've been isolated are probably the Dubs in terms of, you know, the progress they've made under both Pat Gilroy and Matty. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's a one for debate. But I can understand it to a certain extent as well. And that's not just wearing a Munster hat. It's probably wearing a, you know, if you're in the decision making process, that you're probably looking at what do the people want, and you have to kind of put your hat on those particular decisions, I suppose.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. And I think Sky are showing the Dublin-Kilkenny game, so at least that's one more Leinster match. How are you enjoying the analysis with RTE anyways? Like, I mean, I think you've been fantastic. Not easy turnaround good analysis in the little short space of time you have between the live shows and the night show. So you're going to be on the nighttime Sunday game this summer.
Yeah, look, I'm really enjoying it, to be honest with you. Look, on reflection, like Woolly, I suppose, I announced my resignation in the middle of June, and I was almost on it straight away, and I'm not sure how that looked in terms of even the comfort zone of being on it straight away. So in my own personal reflection, I'm saying, geez, did I get involved too soon? And then you're kind of marrying that with the whole opportunity that it presents itself. So I think that kind of actually helped to tide over the initial disappointment of how the year went last year. And then, you know, you kind of, when you're up there at first, you don't want to go into a kind of an environment where you feel like, you know, you're trying to impart something that you know has been evident in a dressing room or in dressing rooms over the last 5 or 6 years, but you don't want to have this kind of, I want to take over attitude. And I think the balance between imparting something that's, you know, in regarding tactical innovation or whatever, and I think you have to be very careful in terms of the language you use, that it's whilst there might be complex things happening, that imparting it in a manner that's simple but yet kind of educational, that's the trick for me, I think. But I would argue with anyone that an analyst's job is to provide depth, and if you can provide depth of what's actually happening as against you know the kind of, I suppose, the humdrum language of populist opinion, I think that voice mightn't be always popular, but it's certainly the voice I'd hope to bring to it, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. And pointing out stuff, there's loads of things now, because hurling has taken on a huge tactical kind of change and evolution in the last few years. And, like, it's almost, we talk about it on the show, it's almost like there's football tactics coming into hurling, because hurling is now using the short stick pass that football always had. So, like, I mean, that's the thing. John Myler has been talking during the week here, and he says he's even comparing it to soccer. He says, you look at the likes of Barcelona and Manchester City, the way they move the ball, a lot of hurling is like that at the moment, working the ball and getting it back in high pressure situations. So it's this big press to win it back, and then it's when you have it, not launching it but picking out passes, and then you obviously won't have options for passes unless the movement is really good. So there's loads of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head with everything there. Even I guess you have later on, I read some quotes from Joe Canning today in the Examiner about the teams basically having 4 or 5 systems of play that they can be fluid within the game and change things as the game is progressing, and the messages could come from water carriers. I think there's a rugby kind of template there. The messages could come from your Mayor Furna, it comes from, so I think the problem I think that people may have with that in terms of perception is that they think that people are overthinking or overanalyzing, or there's too much mechanics involved. But I would feel that generally the tide is changing in terms of the realization that instinct and planning can coexist, you know. And I think, you know, the modern player, I think that's not without being a revisionist. You know, I think we're all traditionalists, but we can innovate and we can come up with tactical plans, and we can still realise that the basic principles of the game, in terms of going for the ball and a huge intensity and huge work ethic, they can all be there as well. So, look, it's brilliant to watch that fluidity of approach from teams, where you know if a guy has, if a defence have stayed zonal and they haven't followed the deep half forwards, that the guys are going to work it until they're in a position to play it into Gillan or play it into Morris Shannon, as we did over the years, or play it into whoever, that, you know, that they're able to think and they're able to play without it hamstringing their kind of natural instinctive kind of ability to play for who they represent and all that. So I just think it's moved on hugely. The unfortunate thing about it is when you say that, it's you're nearly accused as being radical in your viewpoint, you know. And the reality is completely different. It's bringing the simplicity of the message. Like, we had a simple kind of theory amongst, we used to say to ourselves, we'll never work alone. And practically what that would mean is, you know, and I see Coyle Hayes, Morrissey and Hegarty, they have dual roles. Like, you know, they have dual roles. Basically, they have to score, they have to get forward, they have to offer an offensive trip. But if Dermot Burns or Declan Hannan have decided to sit zonally and their man is getting the ball, they're expected to be hit by Morrissey, Hegarty or Hayes. It's as simple as, and that's how it works up and down the field as one. It seems very simple, but there's a lot of off the cuff combined with off the training ground, it's as simple as.
Yeah, that's the thing. I remember you telling me before you would have had a lot of different formations, and this would have been like a criticism of Waterford. So a bit of analysis could be pulled out, and you'd see Maurice Shanahan up front on his own. And I've done an analysis show, and I never used to show any analysis unless I could find, you know, three or four or five, six examples of it, you know, for it to be a pattern. But like, you could have Maurice in on his own for the first 10 minutes, and then you might have Jake Dillon in beside him, and, you know, Shane Bennett would go in then after 20 minutes, and you're constantly moving them in and out, whereas that's not always reflective. And the other team is obviously a little bit confused for 3 or 4 minutes, wondering whether he's coming in or out or who's picking him up. And like, I mean, the intensity part is a given, but obviously the tactics can work alongside that.
Yeah, and look, just even if you're talking about the league final earlier on, if you look at Gillan's approach, even in the league final, there was often, see, I went back and clipped that game myself now, just in terms of just, you know, I'd often look back at it and I say to myself, there's at least 7 or 8 examples where Gillan is in there against Noel Connors, against Callum Lyons, against Tadhg Na Bhfórca, 1 against 3, 1 against 4. And it's what's happened in the run-up to that to allow that to happen, even in delivery of the ball. But you can imagine the size and the groans of discontent amongst the Limerick faithful if that ball had been delivered and Gillan, you know, is beaten by Tadhg. And, you know, and then that can affect your flow. So I just see loads of... And in actual fact, Willie, like, people actually think I'm being disingenuous when I actually say that we probably only played with an out-and-out seven defender probably 4 times in my 5 years. Other than that, it would have been 2 corner forwards come out the field, and if their men come with them, we have a one-on-one situation, obviously, inside. If 1 corner forward comes out and his man comes with him, we have a 2-on-2 situation. If 1 corner forward comes out, zonally, sometimes we might place him. If there was a disparity between a half-back and a guy that he was on that was possibly going to burn him, we wouldn't mark him, but we put Colin Dunford in the area where the most threat was for Cork or Tipperary, etc. But we'd expect him to go get back into to offer an offensive threat as well, and that's why the likes of Colin Dunford and Jake and those guys were taken off after 51 or 52 minutes throughout our 5 years.
Yeah.
So I think it's, and listen, that's probably me having a rant now. It might be perceived as a rant, but now that I'm out of the equation in terms of management, you know, I'm keen to kind of put forward what's actually happening in the games, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely, and it's great that you're involved there. Joe Canning is coming up in part two of the show, and I was talking to him yesterday about Kieran Donaghy's role, and there's a lot of kind of talk now about performance coaches and lifestyle coaches and all this kind of stuff, and it really confused me what Donaghy could provide Galway, a team who's won in All-Ireland and doesn't, like, Michael Fennelly's in with Kildare, I was saying to Joe, and you can see the value he might give them, multiple All-Ireland winner. This is the Kildare footballers, you know, and they haven't won in All-Ireland. But Joe told me Kieran Donaghy's not actually in as this lifestyle coach, which I don't really understand anyway. He's actually coaching forward movement. And I thought it was very interesting that, you know, obviously that's a football man that could add a bit of value because of these, again, measured short balls out in front of players and how you get that yard, and Donaghy might be able to help them with that.
Yeah, and look, you don't have to go back to, you know, 10, 15 years, I suppose, to see Mick Dempsey's influence in Kilkenny in terms of, you know, the whole setup there, both zonally, how they play, the tackle, everything that he's brought to the Kilkenny setup. But yeah, look, Donaghy's an interesting one for me, Colin, because I've only met the chap on 3 occasions, I'd say, but I was struck, first of all, by the force of his personality.
Yeah.
And secondly, I just remember reading, you know, when he announced his retirement about the conversation that he had with Eamon Fitzmaurice around Dublin or Kilkerry's approach on the puck out or on the kick out against Dublin in the semi-final 2 years ago, where they went kind of almost in a full court press and they left there. They basically pushed forward their whole half back line, midfield went forward. And if it didn't work, the half hours are free for Dublin.
Yeah.
The result, and I remember saying to myself, there's something in this fella in terms of how he thinks, how he goes about in terms of strategy. And again, that whole idea of marrying fun and enjoyment with strategy. So I think it's a brilliant move by Micheál. I think I don't think there's much outside the box thinking involved in it, because a guy can translate or transfer the skills of movement, of patterns of movement, of creation of space. And it's almost, you know, it's almost Kinnerk-like. If you look at Kinnerk's influence on Clare and on Limerick now, obviously, he's a football background as well. So people can come from that background and bring a different kind of sense of awareness or spatial awareness to that. And look, when you say those things, spatial awareness, or you, a lot of people, again, perceive those as being gimmicky, but on the training field, the most, for instance, the most underused expression I've ever heard in inter-county dressing room, in my limited time playing, but in my 6 years or 5 years involved in management, has been, we're going out to play 15 on 15. And the most overused outside the dressing room is they just went out man-to-man, 15 on 15. Yes, there'll be individual battles between key matchups, of course there will. But the reality is, most teams, if not all teams, have some sort of system of play and have a fluidity to change it. And Donaghy would, in my opinion, would bring a real X factor to that. And I guarantee as the summer goes on, we'll see evidence of that.
Yeah, no, I think so. Here's another one with Limerick, because they're obviously All-Ireland champions and we're just looking ahead to the summer. And tactically, it's such a difficult team to play against because they want you to follow their half forward line to leave loads of space and to give brilliant ball. If you don't follow them, they're so dangerous. They will actually work it until they can find the spare man that hasn't been followed. So, like, for example, Tadhg De Burca in the league final tried to drop back and cover the full forward line. Because of the brilliant ball they give into Galan and it's diagonal, the sweeper finds it really hard to get over and double up. So are you nearly as well off to follow everyone all over the field and not allow Limerick find a spare man to give in a good ball, or should you be dropping off? It's definitely a difficult one.
Yeah, there's two possibilities there. And just, you know, a good narrative there, or a good analogy, was our approach against Limerick last year was, I won't say conventional, but we play with a certain shape against Tipperary, and we played the same against Limerick, and it completely backfired for us. We saw corner forward come 40 yards from the goal and he has to bring his man with him, which results in the half forward line dropping deep. Therefore, the 5, 6 and 7 are able to stay zonal. But Limerick in reverse brought their two corner forwards right out the field. So they had the numbers out where the traditional kind of war zone is. So for two things for me, I think one, you could follow them. So in other words, you follow Hegarty, you follow Morrissey, you follow Hayes way down the field, 100 yards, which gives Limerick then the chance to go direct and real fast against you in a one-on-one, three-on-three situation.
Yeah.
The only way to do that, ultimately, is probably to play with an out-and-out seven defender. And then you can go with your 5, 6 and 7. You can go with your, 10, 11 and 12. Your 5, 6 and 7 can follow. And you can have a kind of a press of 5 forwards against the 6 backs. The problem there, as you've already alluded to, is Richie English is very comfortable, Casey is very comfortable, Tom Condon is powerful when he runs, and they can run it out against you.
Yeah.
The only other alternative Dublin, I would see is...
Dublin brought back the seventh defender in the league semi-final and gave them some problems. Yeah, but that, then again, you're at this stage now, they have an extra man back and they are so comfortable and it'll end up with Keane Lynch and he'll just pick out the right man and then they're free and now the ball's coming in lovely diagonally again.
Yeah, and the only other alternative I would see is that there's no point in playing Limerick. Like the only other alternative I would see is that you could play with a shape of, we used to call it Cork, that you have two corner forwards out in the middle of the field, which Clare often do. So you line up conventionally, your 13, 14 and 15 have their hurlies up like most teams have now. You're lining up conventionally with Richie English, with Sean Finn, with Mike Casey on the full back line. But the minute the puck goes over your head, that two of your corner forwards or two of your full forward line head straight out in a kind of demonic fashion out to the middle of the field looking for work as the general play is taking place. The problem with that is your 5, 6 and 7 have been brought everywhere on the puck out situation and you haven't had your 10, 11 and 12 back. The only alternative to that is something we did ourselves. The midfielder that's likely to do less damage to you, you could always use one midfielder like Jamie Byrne or Kevin over the years.
And you drop off him.
You drop off. The guy that's not going to kill you, like a Darragh Fitzgibbon could kill you, a Noel McGrath could kill you, a Keane Lynch could kill you. The midfielder that's less likely to do you damage, we'd often have a scenario where you'd go 10, 15 yards off him and offer that kind of zonal help to the guys because they've marked, they've been dragged everywhere, you know. So, but there's doubt in that. That's the only thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a not an easy system to come up with a solution for. There's no doubt about that because, whatever move you make on the chessboard, they have one to kind of counteract it as well because they have Galan who's so good in the air. Maybe it's just man up all over the field and force them into the kind of more long hopeful balls, and you'd hope that your defenders can break it down in front, you know. Because although Flanagan and Galan can win those type of long hopeful balls, that's where they kind of have
and
you.
That's the thing, you can do that. And in Walsh Park, for instance, I think Watford will have the opportunity to do that. It will almost look like they're manning up, but they'll still be able to be up and down the field in waves. They'll have the opportunity. The similarity I would see with Limerick, with, we'd say that Cork team of 2005, 2006, if you look at the Cork team when they're preparing for the All-Ireland final against Galway, whatever year that was it 05 or 06, I can't remember now offhand. But they were renowned for being this short passing team, doing low, controlling things from the goal.
Yeah.
And for the final then, they actually changed their approach against Galway, went very, very direct. And I think Limerick have the ability, with the aerial prowess of Gillan, of Jamie Flanagan, of, you know, of Conor Boylan even, a guy that's been put up on a shelf since the league match against Kilkenny almost, and when will we see him during the summer, you know? And they have that ability to change it up as well, which is a dangerous thing. Hegarty could slip in full forward, into the full forward, and they could go with a kind of a Twin Towers approach as well if they needed it. And I'd imagine they can mix it like that as well.
Yeah, no, they definitely can. Come here, their success under puckouts is off the charts. So Tom Morrissey was being interviewed this week and he said that teams have been starting to figure out. He said it was happening during the course of last year as well. The most obvious one I came up against was Waterford in the league final. It was blatantly obvious they were trying to set out to stop us getting a good starting point on puckouts. They won 70% of their own puckouts, which is, for me, it's outstanding for hurling. Like, it's an outstanding figure for Gaelic football, never mind hurling.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. Now, a proper breakdown of those things would show, again, the Kinnerk, Fitzgerald, even Davy Fitzgerald. I know people might link Davy with Limerick, but I would see an influence or a kind of correlation between Davy and Kinnerk having worked together as well, in terms of the, you know, the constant grouping together, the creation of space up front, the amount of puckers that go to a corner back in the league final to Richie English, for instance, because Waterford had a similar tactic to Clare had against Cork under Don Logue a couple of years ago in the Munster final, where Clare, you know, were renowned for that kind of movement under pucket, and Cork brought, or sorry, Clare brought their whole half forward line back to stop Nash's puckouts, if you like. The one lesson for me in that was in the 2017 Munster Championship game against Cork, we prepared absolutely meticulously for Nash's puckouts, to the point where we would say we leave Damien Cahalan free, he's maybe perhaps our Cullum Spillane free, we'd have the person and we'd line up a two or we'd line up a three, and he still picked us out that day. And the general point, and I hate to be as mundane as this, but by the time we got to the All-Ireland semi-final and we played Cork, it was a complete focus on our own style, our own selves. And that's not, that probably contradicts what I said earlier on in terms of planning.
Yeah.
But you have two choices. You know, you can have the classic handover, which Limerick do. Dermot Burns hands over to the guy that's running into the position, or you can concede the puck out to the most likely or the least likely to do you damage in terms of the full back line, and see, and have a straight press from there after he gets the possession. But Limerick are good at working it out, but it only takes a couple of turnovers to change the momentum and mood of the whole thing, which happened to us in the 2017 All-Ireland semi-final. Nash went to the sideline, we had Shaney Bennett and Jake covering the full forward line, and once you turn them over a couple of times, the momentum can swing and the mood can drop with most teams. Limerick, I'm not sure, because they seem to have a fairly powerful mental edge in terms of sticking to what they do as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, if you rattle them, you put manners on it once or twice. And I remember that All-Ireland semi-final, Nash put one over the sideline. It was a huge cheer, and
that's,
it was
right,
almost like it was as good as a score, really, for ye. But, like, I mean, for me, just looking on the obvious, the best tactics I can see from puckouts, and Clare very obviously do it, Limerick do it, fairly sure ye did it as well, is just to go back half a line. So your full forward line drops back halfway between the half forward line, and then your half forward line drops back towards midfield, and you're close to every line, but you're not on every line. So if it goes short to the corner back, all three full forward line will push up. They'll all push up. So now, instead of having a set play puck out, your cornerback's under pressure. So that works in that regard. And it also works if they go long, you have enough bodies close enough to where it's going to land.
Exactly. You have the numbers. It would have been shape. We played against Kilkenny in 2016 All-Ireland semi-final draw match and replay. You're within the war zone of, like, Brick would work with Philip Manny, 10 and 5 working together, 7 and 12 work together, 11 and 6 work together, and the 13, 14 and 15 are 10 yards off their cornerback, Hurley's up, etc. And again, if you can tie that in with one of the midfielders, perhaps. So if Tyg has gone man-to-man with TJ Reid, and TJ Reid is dragging him to the sideline, he's gone with him, but Jamie Barron has gone back on the break because he's on what we view as the lesser midfielder in terms of a fella that's going to get it and damage us by scoring from long range, etc. You know, and I think everyone knows the role, and it's a fairly simple role. And that ties in with the whole debate around, is it a sweeper or is it a deep-lying centre-back as well, that there's no ambiguity there that you know, if I looked at it over the, if I statistically looked at the 5 years I was involved in and the amount of scores that centre forwards have got across the board, because the centre back on most teams, Declan Hannan, Gerard McInerney, Tadhg Mar, Tadhg De Borca, Killian Buckley have just, they've married a system whereby they're able to be back sweeping up, but they're also able to kind of, there's a realisation that they're going to concede maybe 2 or 3 points or 4 points from play off their direct opponent, but it's what they're bringing to the whole overall team plan, you know?
Yeah, every team plays a sweeper and they use their centre-back as the sweeper. The only team that doesn't use their centre-back as a sweeper is Wexford, and Matthew O'Hanlon man-marks the centre-forward. That's because they have a sweeper already back there. So my argument is, when every team is defending, they always have a sweeper. It's just when they're attacking, Wexford will still have the sweeper, where the others will kind of have moved back to more towards an orthodox position. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's very fair. I think I heard a brilliant interview with Brian Cullen a number of years ago when he retired from the Dublin football, and he talked about a defensive advantage. You know, a defensive advantage, he just said, on every play. And I think what Limerick do often, that's not noticed, they often leave Dermot Burns as well as Declan Hannan.
They do, yeah,
back
they do.
In that particular zone. And he becomes that option for, if a ball drops into Nicky Quaid's hand, he's the fella that will just go out to the right half. You know, the ball will come out to the right half back area straight away, and he's setting up that long crossfield ball then from his area, because he's such a good striker. So I'd say, if you're preparing for Limerick, you're going to be preparing to kind of cut off that Dermot Burns, Declan Hannan axis. And ironically, the only way to do that might be to even not play without a full forward line. It sounds a bit dramatic, but to play with it, you know, almost a marking system on those 5, 6, and 7, not in the Tommy Welch, Lar Corbett type scenario now, but read up on them, and yet you have your full forward line out in front of them. And that sounds a bit mad, because you have 6 forwards in the line out the field, but that's what Limerick, I think, are going to face from different teams as the summer develops. But it's all interesting in terms of the debate, and it's you know, I think it's part of the whole discussion that interests me more than anything.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here, Nicky English was talking, he was at the Sky launch, and he was talking about Parnell Park. And I thought they were interesting comments. We mentioned them on Monday, but it was just me and Conan here, and we don't know the first thing of what we're talking about on a hurling pitch. But he says, he's talking about Parnell Park. He says, teams won't like going to Parnell Park. For me, I'm not sure. From an intercounty hurling perspective for championship matches, it's a very difficult place to go. Like, you could argue, if you're the opposition, whether it's fair to actually play in Parnell Park, because it's very tight. And I hadn't really heard anybody come out that strongly against it, because I was looking at the measurements of the pitches, and Walsh Park is actually 2 metres even tighter than Parnell Park. Like, I didn't know there was this much thought went into the size of the pitch, and would it even have an effect on maybe the way you would set up?
Well, I think there's something in it. Like, first of all, I don't think it's unfair. I have to be perfectly honest. And I know this sounds a bit bland, but it is what it is. Like, Parnell Park brings other challenges for the other teams, in that it's the home venue, it's the traditional fortress established under Daly, if you like, or built on by Gilroy last year to a certain extent, and further by my Matty. So it's the, you know, without being, as I said, that cliched pundit, it brings that Galatasaray element to, and so does Welsh Park, and all those home venues bring that. In terms of setting up, I think there is a difference. I think in Walsh Park, for instance, I've alluded to it already, I think you can set up with a defensive six very, very close, very, very tight together. It looked like it's conventional to many eyes, but it'll be far from conventional, because you have the ability to be able to get your extra midfielders, your forwards up and down the field, and it'll just be the win or the victory or the performance will be classed in next day's newspapers as complete honesty of approach, work ethic, etc. But if you have an opportunity to train in a field for 5 or 6 weeks beforehand, and you have 2 home games there, it creates many, many rewarding benefits, if you like. So, I think it is a factor. It's a smaller pitch. Parnell Park and Walsh Park are smaller pitches. The one I'm surprised by in terms of dimensions is that Limerick is only 2 metres wider than Walsh Park. I would see it as being a lot more expansive than Walsh Park. I think the thing about some of the venues, Nolan Park, Walsh Park and Parnell Park, in particular, is this the crowd seems to be kind of in on top of you, and it kind of lends itself to maybe not the most detailed analysis on the actual width of the pitch. But for me, it does create, you know, it married with the whole passion of the crowd is the fact that the dimension of the pitch allows for just, you know, a certain way of playing, if you like.
Yeah, so that was it. So Parna, I was surprised at the Gaelic grounds as well. Now, I pulled that off Wikipedia, Derek, so we know
yeah,
what
yeah.
that's like.
But
on that, Parnell Park is 141 metres long by 82 metres wide. Walsh Park is 142 long by 80. And that's just in comparison to likes of Pier Stadium or Semple Stadium, which are the biggest under the measurements that you're allowed, is 145 by 90. So Walsh Park is 10 metres, 5 on either side, more narrow than Semple Stadium. It's definitely a massive difference. Like it's a back's ground anyways. It's not a forward movement.
100%, and a simple one. I always just say, we were just an interesting thing talking to Dan over the years. I say, how many times have we seen wing forwards been taken off from Wells Park? You know, for my 5 years, I know it's a simple, just in, you know, in social conversations. Anytime I look at where there's always wing forwards, it's always a game where the game is dominated down the middle almost, you know, where you have, there's no room really for, you know, not expansive hurling. I don't even like the word expansive hurling, but, you know, there's it's just an up and down pitch in terms of, what I mean by the ability forwards and backs should be able to get up and down the pitch all day in such a tight confines, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Here, were you surprised about the ticket allocation in Waterford? Because I was reading this week and I was surprised. I tried to get in contact with the Waterford County Board, but there was no answer to the phone, which is a lot of county boards when I ring them, actually, but that's neither here nor there. They never seem to answer the phone. But he says... it said that even though it's a home game from Waterford, Clare will receive the same allocation of tickets. So 11,500 are going to get in, and Clare are due. Like, the whole idea of a home advantage is obviously what we talked about, you know, familiarity with the pitch. But then there's having that kind of Galatasaray, like you mentioned, element of most of the support is yours. There's a huge roar when you score, and you could hear a pin drop when they score. That in the GEA, and was the same with Newbridge or Nowhere last year. Mayo got the same allocation as Kildare, even though Kildare had a home game. So it must be some sort of GEA policy. It doesn't seem fair to the home team.
Yeah, it's baffling, really, now, Colm. It's baffling because, look, sometimes I think we become so ingrained in structural approaches and the whole ability to keep things equal and fair that we forget to come outside that systematic approach in terms of what we do at times. You know, I think that's, you know, like, as I said, I'm living 20 yards from the ground. My parents live 20 yards from the ground in Welsh Park, and the atmosphere is building there already to what's going to happen Sunday week, but it's carnage here in terms of ticket situations. You know, it's actually carnage because sometimes we can live in a kind of a snobby kind of world when we're involved in the GAA that we tend to say, oh, if you're not involved in a club, if you're not involved, you know, you're not really, you know, grassroots, you're not really, you know, living by the association's rules, etc.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of genuine, and I mean genuine, sincere Waterford followers over the years who are not members of clubs, but they actually social aspect of going, they've gone to every league game, they go to every Munster league game, and they're going to be left stranded without tickets. So I think, look, you're asking me a question, and I think it should be 60-40 for the home games. If you want me to give a percentage on it, you know, it should be even 70-30.
Jeez, I'd go 80-20 for a home game.
I'm on a program here, and there's no point in pontificating about without coming with some sort of solution. So I would say, you know, 60-40, 70-30 in terms of the breakdown. And the teams know from the start of the year that's the way it's going to be. Supporters know from the start of the year and make it clear from the start, and there'll be no ambiguity then.
Yeah, no, that's it. See, maybe then, you know, Tipperary might complain in that Semple Stadium can hold enough for everybody. So, you know, they're not, you know, curtailing.
But the detail... The key is in the detail of the planning. You know, if you're 50,000 in Thurles, well then, you know, you can have a different breakdown. You know, if you're going to be specific, you have to be specific based on the allocation or the capacity of the grounds.
Yeah, no, exactly. Come here, I'm going to finish up on a really difficult one, which, Derek, I don't know if there's any right answer for this, and that's Austin Gleeson's best position. So you played him in a variety of different positions. You tried to give him a free role when you got to the All-Ireland, and he ended up just being man-marked by the corner forward, corner back, all over the field. And I talked about this on the show loads of times, that there's actually nothing worse than having that free role, but the cornerback follows you out and man marks you, because all those handy little balls you get around the midfield, if you're on your own or if you're being loosely marked, you get them. But if there's a man standing beside you, you don't even get those handy balls out around midfield then, and you're completely in no man's land. And I think Parik is playing him wing forward, and there's talk of this free roll and stuff. Number one, does he need a free roll? Like, he's great in the air, he can win his own ball. He can win his own ball anyways. His centre back is being flirted with. Like, where do you get... He needs to just maybe, in his head, mentally prepare for being man-marked in every single game and try to figure his own game out. That's his starting point, maybe, is it?
Yeah, and look, even if I take the 2017 champion, might be a good starting point. He went into the corner at the start of that game, and our plan, and Shane Bennett was in the other corner, and our plan was to bring the two of them out in general play, if you like. So he was picked up by Colm Spillane. So Colm Spillane follows him all day long, doesn't give him much change. In actual fact, gives him no change. And same happens with Chaney in the other corner. The debate surrounds, you know, Waterford for the next, should have a fixed position, etc., blah, blah. We play him at centre-forward, not as a reaction to what people are saying, but more so in a system whereby he comes to the middle of the field with the notion that perhaps the centre-back might give him some leeway from when he's centre-forward, but he comes to the middle of the field. But if the centre-back follows him, Austin has to have an awareness that he's doing it. The team role here is that it's opening up for the boys inside in a one-on-one or two-on-two situation. And so in the semi-final of 2016, he went centre-forward. Conor Fogarty picked him up, man-marked him, kind of went out the field, almost like Tony Kelly was marked when Clare won the All-Ireland by Brian Murphy. And he can go anywhere, and the man is with him. But he's getting involved in the play, but he's aware of the fact that he's been man-marked as well, and he's aware of the space he's creating. So I don't like him in the wing-forward role, if I'm completely honest. I think it's the one role that where he could be more isolated than any other role. He's played five for me, he's played number six, and he's played centre-forward, and he's played as a roaming corner-forward. But I think the interesting debate about the roaming corner-forward, I like him out in the middle of the field, right in the middle of the field, where he has an awareness of, not as an 8 or 9 now, but if he's going to be out there as an extra corner-forward or an extra midfielder, that he's facing the goal. I actually don't like him as a back-to-goal forward. Now, right. I know you'll come up with the, you'll counteract that and say, Jesus, Early, he was brilliant against Kilkenny in 2016 in the All-Ireland semi-final and All-Ireland semi-final replay. I like him as a go-forward, if you like, where he's facing the actual opposition goal as opposed to his back to the opposition goal. I think that's where he's at his best, coming from deep, coming from that area almost like Tony Kelly, from the middle of the field. And I think it's just up to the whatever strategy Waterford employs. Sometimes you can pick the corner you want him to go into. You can leave him in there for 10 minutes. Against Clare in 2016, we left him in the corner for 10 minutes and he gets a couple of scores, and then you can mix and match with it once his confidence is up based on he's flowing then, you know. So I think so when I see the debate around him, I think it's he needs to be kind of minded in the game, and people need to have a connection with him in terms of now we have him flowing, now we can, he can, and he'll understand each of the jobs he has in those particular roles. And people might listen to that and say that's completely complex. It's almost a Pogba debate where you're kind of saying, oh, Pogba is better suited to left the midfield, or he's better suited to the centre and all that kind of stuff. Austin can hurl, and he can hurl free even if there's a man on him, and that's what he realises, and he needs to realise that. He knows that himself. I would have had that discussion. You know, what team setting up against Waterford in their right mind is going to let Austin free? So he's just going to have to deal with that situation, whether it's centre-forward, wing-forward, midfield, in the half-back, he's going to have to deal with that. And I think that's a debate that would surround Austin. But he's good enough, and I think he's highly tuned coming into the championship now to produce a good championship. I think we're going to see the best of him in this championship ahead of us.
Good. Well, fingers crossed. I wonder, would midfield be his best position? Because midfielders don't man-mark each other, for starters. Then if he was midfield, the other team might have to move a back up into midfield, and then their midfielder might be in no-man's land, maybe having to move back into the half-back line. Do you know what I mean? Would midfield...
Yeah, it's a good point. And I saw him in a recent club match against Roan Moore now playing midfield. He looked happy, there.
Right.
You know, I think the debate is about realising what your job is as well, realising that there's a structural element to your job as well, in that I am able to mark, I am able to hurl, and I am able to kind of score. I can be free, but I can still concede. If I went through the stats on midfielders, that each fella's marking each other, getting 3 and 4 points from each other. Jamie Barron got 2 goals and a point against Cork a couple of years ago in the semi-final of Ireland. I think Dara Fitzgibbon nipped 3 points off him the same day. You know, it's the reality is that there could be something in that in terms of a good midfield five for Barron, if you like, there, and the ability to get forward from there. But I think it's more a situation where the media or people interested in Austin and what is best position, not they need to lay off, but they need to realise that, I suppose, that a variety of positions for him doesn't, is only an excuse for him not playing well. You know, it's only an excuse. He needs to, you know, it's the certainty can come with the uncertainty, and that sounds contradictory. But
see that,
that's where I would be. That's where I would see him flowing. You know,
and that's the thing as well. But also, he needs to probably realise, and I'm sure he does realise, that a lot of these debates are based around where can he get into the game the most. Whereas, like, I mean, like I said, he can win his own ball. Like, Tony Kelly's going to get man-marked no matter what game he goes out in. The best players are going to be man-marked. It's not about finding a position that he needs to be free. Like, that's never going to happen. He needs to realise, listen, and in his own head figure out maybe how to lose these man-markers and how to maybe, you know, drag one to the sideline if he's smaller than him and be isolated for a puck out, you know, and use his head on the field as well to get himself into the game, not for someone else to get him into it.
Yeah, and look, I remember reading an interesting quote, Chaffetz Patrick, the All-Ireland final against Kilkenny a number of years ago, where he didn't touch the ball for the first 28 minutes. Right, if Austin's not on the ball for the first 28 minutes, it's not good for Waterford. We need him flowing to have ultimate success, I think. I think we need him in the game. We need him flowing. But you take, I was just at something yesterday, Willie, and I was saying that Conor Gleeson would be a good midfield foil for Jamie, because, you know, he could take down Keane Lynch, he could take down Darragh Fitzgibbon, he could take down Noel McGrath, he could take down the players that you think are going to do you most damage in the other midfield, and he could still be able to play. So I think Austin is in a similar scenario, that he knows that, and when he's angry and when has a little bit of indignation about him, that's when he actually flows the best, you know. And
right.
and I think that's what's ahead of him. I think there's a very good template there. The Munster under 21 final of 2016, Austin was right half back, went into centre back, and he dominated the game down in Welsh Park in a manner that, you know, was just really, really striking. And I just think he's going to bring his best to Welsh Park. He's living in the town. He's from the city. He's a townie, for want of a better phrase. And I just think he's going to bring everything he has to those two home games in particular. And I think we won't be debating position. But listen, we played against Clare in 2016. Without mentioning, you know, the analysis, it was described that day that he was playing great in the half back line because he had number six on his back, but he wasn't even playing in the half back line. He was just, you know, he was flowing.
Yeah.
He was flowing, and he was coming from deep. But I'm looking forward to seeing what he'll bring to it, because I expect him to bring something really, really, really special to it.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, Derek, I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much for that, and hopefully we'll talk to you again over the course of the summer. Right. So, Hurling to the Core ambassador Joe Canning was in Dublin today, or yesterday, to announce more unmissable rewards for Bord Gáis Energy Reward Club customers. So I went along to the Clarence Hotel to talk to Joe. So that's going to come up next.
Can't touch this. You can't touch this.
A few weeks later, they played Kilkenny below Nolan Park. The same year.
Can't touch this.
And they were being hockey. But the camera went in. There was a fella warming up. Well, Jesus, you should see him. Yeah, the fuck. He was massive. Legs, arse, built. But I bust out laughing watching him. There he was, the epitome of what I said.
I told you, homeboy. You can't touch this.
So I'm here in the Clarence Hotel with Joe Canning. Joe, good to see you.
Cheers, Willie.
How are you?
Good, yeah, not too bad.
You've had the operation. Where are you at?
Yeah, I had it just over 4 weeks ago. So,
okay.
So I'm fine, rehabbing again, and another 14 to 16 weeks altogether. So another long road to go, but
so
it's good, yeah.
Yeah, it is a long road to go, because if it's 14 to 16 weeks, obviously that's late July.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, like, I mean, is it difficult to stay positive, you know? Because you're looking at All-Ireland semi-final as the best-case scenario at that stage, are you?
Yeah, well, there's no date. Like, I could give you a lot of numbers as well if you think we're going to get into an All-Ireland semi-final now. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a long way to go yet, but it is hard enough kind of stay positive in a way, because you're not training or not contributing in a way to the group, but at the same time, it is what it is, do you know. The lads are training well, and do you know, they're confident enough, and we're looking forward really to to Carlow next weekend in Galway as well. So that's a big one for us. You know, they always say to try and win your home games, especially. So that's a huge one for us, you know.
So you're staying around the group?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have like you got a role? Or, like, I mean, do you need a role? Or would Michal kind of understand, maybe, you know, help out the management team in some way? With your experience?
Not really, but I'm always there. Obviously, I'm rehabbing now with physios and the doc and stuff like that. So, like, I'm doing all that at training as well and seeing them there. So I have my bits and pieces to be doing while the lads are out in the field. And, yeah, if anybody wants any bit of, I suppose, info or anything like that, like, I'm there to be asked. But, yeah, I'm at every training. People think when you're injured, you just go away and on your own for a while and do your own thing. But, no, I'm probably doing more now than I was when I was actually on the field.
But I'm just wondering, like, when you got injured initially, like, I know from getting injured, I took them really badly. There's a grieving period where you have to stop thinking about yourself and go, right, when I go back in there, it's not about my injury. So I'm just wondering, when you got injured, did you need like a week before you started to get over the kind of feel sorry for yourself? Because it's natural to feel sorry for yourself straight away.
Yeah, no, like, I don't, like... Not really, like,
no.
I was just going, like, surgery now and next week, so just get that done. Like, I've been through it before, do you know what I mean? So it's not something new to me. I did the hamstring 2 years ago, so it's the same kind of thing. But
that one wasn't as bad, because that was closing off a year and you'd missed club and you were obviously, I'll be back next year. Whereas this one, it couldn't get a worse timing, really, you know? I'm not trying to make it feel worse.
No, but it is what it is, and you just have to get on with it, you know?
Yeah.
You can't be feeling sorry for yourself or worrying about it. There's a bigger picture in the team and the panel together and getting them right for championship.
Yeah, I suppose it's important to have interests outside of hurling, which we know you do, because I know from my own point of view, when it was all football, the minute that's not going right, your life is terrible, you know?
Yeah,
you need to maybe separate it and not let it carry into your life.
Yeah, and I'm very conscious that I'm probably, like, I'm trying to set up my life for after hurling as well. So I'm busy business-wise and stuff like that. So that kind of takes my mind off a lot of things and outside of actually training and rehab and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm pretty full-on with work and stuff. So that's good to keep my mind occupied.
Cheddar Plunkett, our own Cheddar on the show, was texting me looking for your number. I think he had lost his phone. I'm sure you got a lot of messages from everybody. Would you like? I mean, because you're probably the Tiger Woods of hurling. Like, no, but without blowing smoke off your ass. But you're the big
name. I hope not.
would you be surprised at the messages you would get, kind of, when something like that happens?
Yeah. It's funny. The last time I probably met Cheddar was at Willie Hyland's wedding down in Kilkenny. So, I appreciate everybody. You know, it's always nice to have people obviously thinking about you, but. It surprised a few, but they were nice to get you.
Any rivals send you messages that you were surprised about?
Not really, no. Do you know? Like, I wouldn't say rivals, you know. I think we all get on fairly well, even off the pitch and stuff like that. So, it was all good. A few of the boys texted as well for other counties and stuff. So it was nice to receive, yeah.
Yeah. What about the hit, anyways? Because we talked about the hit a lot. And it was a legal hit, right?
So,
I mean... In Gaelic football, that would be a foul because you can't hit someone when they're in the act of kicking it. But in hurling, when you're winding up to puck it, you're fair game for a shoulder like that.
Yeah. It was fine. There was nothing wrong with it.
No,
so
it was a great hit, really.
Perfect. No, it was perfect. If one of our lads did it, it might be this exact same way. So, Kev hit me spot on, you know, and that's basically it. You know, there's no other way of like talking around it or anything like that. So, perfect hit. Just carry on.
And are you all aware in hurling that that's legal? Because Brian Carroll had to actually ask a referee to get it cleared up for us. Because it doesn't look fair when you're winding up to hit it. You know what I mean? But it is in the rules of hurling.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of rules I don't really know about. You know. So it depends on obviously. Interpretation as well, like it's a split second decision as well, so like some referees might have given it a free, some mightn't obviously, so it is what it is, but I wasn't aware of it. It never really happened to me before in a way, so like it didn't really bother me whether I knew about it or not, that kind of way.
But like, I mean, for you going on a run like that towards the end of the game, like because of who you are, you're the talisman for Galway. You're leaving. You probably know when you're setting off on a run like that, somebody's lining you up somewhere along on the line, or would that even enter your head?
No, that doesn't.
No,
that doesn't. No, you're just going either to lay off a pass or draw a man, or else if it opens up for you and the shot is on, the shot is on. So, you know, that's just it. Like, you're trying to obviously influence the game as best you can, and like, I ran through in the first half even and just laid off a pass where, like, nobody hit me. So so that's just the way it is.
So even in a club match, you wouldn't be thinking, geez, this is a filthy game. I'm not going to go on any soul runs here. I'm just going to get it. I'm just going to get it in there.
No. That's if you're worried about getting hit and hurling, I think you need to give it up. You know?
Come here, have you talked to Kieran Donaghy, or is Kieran Donaghy in much, or what's his role in there? I haven't spoken to anyone from Galway since I heard he was involved.
Yeah, no, Kieran's in a small bit. Obviously, he was busy with the basketball and stuff like that over the last few weeks and winning the title with the guys. So he's in and out, so it's good to have him around. He's a very infectious kind of character, I suppose. So he's good for us just to have him in around, you know.
And it's just bouncing kind of a life. I'm sorry now, but I don't really understand what these performance coaches do, because Michael Fennelly is in, he's in with the Kildare Footballers. And I'm just wondering, cross codes, how I could see Michael Fennelly, after winning so many All-Irelands, might give Kildare, who've never won an All-Ireland, whereas I see Kieran Donaghy coming in to talk to you, you know, or Conor Cooney, or any of the lads who have All-Irelands, and I'm wondering kind of what role he would be able to provide.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a lifestyle coach, performance coach, I don't know where people got that out of,
right.
But he's in with the forwards, maybe doing a bit of movement and stuff like that. And obviously he's been like with Kerry, who were so successful for so long, and if he can give us an extra 0.5% or 1%, like, we lost last year's All-Ireland by 1 point, so if he can add another 1 or 2 points to us, then it's a success. Do you know what I mean? It's small margins.
Yeah, and I suppose that's a good idea, considering the fact that there's a new style in hurling now. So maybe movement in the forwards 10 years ago didn't need to be at the level it needs to be at now, you know, whereas like pinpointing passes are...
It's totally different. Even when I started off, like, you were 15 on 15 and off you go, like,
win a ball or get a break.
So hurling's changed an awful amount. So if you can get even a different set of eyes and a different, like, when you're in a team environment, and I've seen it with the club even down through the years, like, when we were successful a few years ago, that a different pair of eyes just sees something different that you mightn't actually realise in the group. So if you keep adding freshness to the group, it obviously it brings on things, you know.
Yeah, Cheddar talks about basketball stuff on the podcast, like this bunch and break in the full forward line and stuff like that. So this is all probably new in hurling. Although Damien Hayes does talk, like, his movement would have been excellent. Maybe it's more not individual movement, it's movement as a collective tree inside or something like that.
Yeah, every team is different. Do you know what I mean? It all depends on how you set up and how you play. As I said, if he adds maybe a percentage to us, all the better. Looking forward to working with him a bit better when I get back in the pitch eventually, hopefully.
So, come here, where are Galway at then? Because for me, looking from the outside, it's all doom and gloom. You're gone, Conor Cooney's gone, Joe Cooney was gone, Johnny Glynn was gone, Cottle Mannion was gone into midfield, so suddenly nearly your whole forward line was kind of ripped up. So we know Joe Cooney's back, we know Johnny Glynn could come back as well. So what's it like in the camp? Like, you've taken a few blows.
Not really, like, no, like, the lads are training away, they're, like, relatively speaking, we had a successful enough league. Like, any day we went out, if you actually looked at our team compared to, let's say, our All-Ireland final team, we probably only had 5 or 6 starters from the All-Ireland every day, so, like, lads were putting their hands up, and it wasn't as if, you know, we didn't have the lads, like, the guys that probably weren't starting last year are putting their hands up for inclusion this year, and so there's a good competitiveness in the panel. And it's about finding, you know, another 2 or 3 guys to add on every year, as like Kilkenny used to do it back in the day, like Dublin Footballers, I suppose, are doing it now, do you know what I mean? So it's like that, and like, if we can find another few that are breaking into the team now, all the better. And I think we did that during the league, and lads got good experience from that. And then when you get the guys back in, it obviously adds to it again. And even having the St. Thomas's guys back in, Dahi from Currafin back in, the Ormore guys back in, and a few lads coming back from injury. So we're in a good place, obviously, the last few weeks with club championship disrupted a little bit of the training and stuff, as it does for every county. That play a club championship, I suppose, in April. So it was, so we're just concentrating, I suppose, on Carlow, and that's our biggest challenge. It's so competitive now that you can't look past any game, you know, because you need to get points on the board. So Carlow is our biggest challenge, and obviously, like we've seen in the league, a draw match down there in Carlow, so it's going to be a tough challenge again up in Pier Stadium.
I suppose you mentioned April for clubs, and we'd be pretty critical of it on the show, and maybe just from your experience of trying to prepare for a championship, try out lads in the league, so you're not fully sure what your full team is, and trying to settle on your full team without being able to play any games or really do too much training.
Yeah, it's funny, you only have probably, like, it depends obviously when you finish your club championship, but realistically maybe 2 or 3 weeks kind of lead in from it. So yeah, it is difficult, but everybody's in the same boat. Do you know, I think Dublin footballers went for the whole month off.
Yeah. But they walk through Leinster, you know, whereas you'll have a difficult Leinster championship, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's good in a way, you get back to your clubs and you kind of a little bit refreshed again, do you know what I mean? It's a different kind of mindset. You're going back, it's probably a little bit less pressurised situation. So it's nice to get back with the club lads. Obviously, I didn't do it this year, but it's nice for the rest of the guys, yeah.
So with the injury now, sorry, just that you went, you got the operation 4 weeks ago. Where are you as regards running? Where are you in the gym?
No, I'm just doing rehab with the physios and stuff like that.
Just strengthening it up?
Yeah, basically.
And you're getting the friction work on your brain, which is the worst place in the world.
Exactly, so just that's basically it.
Do you have a timetable of when you get out in the field? Because I know psychologically, when you leave the gym and actually get down in the field, you feel that it's a huge step.
It's just going from week to week. So that's basically it. It's just rehab at the moment. I don't know when I'd be on the field, to be honest. I don't like putting dates on things, because then if you don't meet it, you're kind of put back again. So yeah, I'll just go with whatever the physios tell me, and I'll trust him 100%.
And you're not in there on your own. You have a couple of teammates in on the treatment table.
Yeah, Fintan is in there now. He got the surgery on his cruciate a few weeks ago as well. So the two of us are kind of resting up inside, lying on the tables, getting physio. So it's good. Yeah.
But at least you have someone, because on your own, it's a disaster. Yeah. Quick, just to finish up, obviously you were looking to retain it last year, and every year when we have an All-Ireland champion, they immediately go in as the ones to beat the following year. Limerick are in that hot seat now. I mean, how difficult? You seem to be going through the year really, really well, maybe up until you met Clare and then struggled over them, but they're a very good team. And then lost out to Limerick. Like, is the pressure to retain it huge? People are talking about Dublin's 5 in a row now. Like, what is it like in hurling? Because no team really has done it outside of Cork and Kilkenny, who was a bit of a kind of a freaky team. How difficult are Limerick going to find that kind of pressure to repeat it? Or
I don't think they're doing too bad.
No. You were in a similar boat last year too. You know, at this time.
Yeah, like, you know, they kind of powered through the league, I suppose, and got on very well. So it doesn't look to be phasing them in any way. I don't think it phased us either. I don't think there was huge pressure. I think, like, if you look at our record over the last 2 years, I think we've been pretty consistent. I think we've only lost maybe one match in 2 years in championship. So it doesn't weigh too heavily on us, you know. And I don't think it's weighing heavily on Limerick either. And it's up to every other team, I suppose, to get up to their level and try and surpass it. And it's going to make for a good championship, I think, both Munster and Leinster, and then whoever get out of both provincial ties and get onto the All-Ireland series. It should be a good summer.
Yeah, fingers crossed it's as good as last year. Well, thanks very much.
Cheers, Willie, no bother.
All right, great stuff from Joe Canning there. Right, that's always time for this week. We'll be back next Thursday, where we will be really in championship mode. We'll be looking ahead to the start of the Hurling Championship. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are on the we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.